Hi, this is Zoe Durand, and I'm a family lawyer and mediator, and you're listening to the Inside Family Law podcast. This podcast is presented by Mediation Answers in partnership with Artwork and Lawyer Magic. Over the course of these episodes, I will take you on a 360-degree deep dive into all aspects of the family law process by talking with some of the greatest minds in family. I'm hoping that through this podcast, we can really encourage interdisciplinary conversations and perspectives that allow us to go deeper into what is really going on in the family law process, and that also make us more curious in our approaches to family law and how we do what we do every day. Hi, this is Zoe Durand. I'm here reporting live at the Pacifica Congress Conference. We're here in Hobart for the 2023 conference, and I'm here with two of the wonderful facilitators. If you'd like to each introduce yourselves and what you do.
Hi, I'm Professor Nicola Taylor. I'm from the University of Otago in New Zealand, where I teach family law, and I'm Director of the Children's Issues Centre as well.
Hi, I'm Professor Marilyn Freeman from the UK. I'm part of the law faculty at the University of Westminster and also co-director of the International Centre for Family Law Policy and Practice.
Wow, well, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with at the conference and with me in this interview. So what did you speak on at the conference this year?
We were talking about identity. And we were talking about identity issues that relate to children and young people in reference particularly to their involvement in the family justice field. But specifically, we were exploring the topic of identity in terms of family justice because we were looking at what family law means. And is it restricted to our conventional thoughts about what comprises family law, or is it much broader than that? And our argument was that it is in fact much broader, so we could look outside of the more traditional areas of family law and start looking at areas which impact on children and families but have not been traditionally thought of as part of the family's law syllabus. And that was an important part of what we were trying to do, to broaden out the issues and to take feedback from the various disciplines of people that were there and get people thinking around the topic.
Because it is true, family law, you just often think in that really sort of, it sounds a bit simplistic, but like divorce, no. So
exactly.
What are you trying to sort of broaden it potentially to include, for example?
Well, as you say, divorce, separation, relocation, adoption, custody.
Sorry,
are the kind of traditional areas that are considered to be at the heart of what family law is all about. But there's a whole lot of transitions and experiences that children and young people have that transcend those particular areas, or sometimes occur as well, you know, in relation to
parallel
them.
To that, yeah.
So what we're thinking about is things like child soldiering, gender transitions, child sports people, because, you know, many children and young people end up identifying very strongly with a sports team, for example, and we've seen examples of abuses in the media with coaches, etc.
Yeah.
So what we're interested in is trying to open up the space for other family justice professionals to start considering how fundamental identity and its formation and its disruption can be to children and family members over time.
Look, you mentioned things like in terms of sort of, I guess, gender issues and children that are transitioning, and that can obviously is sort of getting a bit more talk space recently. Was there anything discussed particularly in relation to that?
There was. We had a psychologist, Astrid Martalis, from Cape Town, speaking about how identity forms and particularly the significance of adolescence for that period in which identity is integrating and then consolidating through into early adulthood. Mm. And of course the point she was making was that identity isn't static, it evolves, it's fluid, and as we have more experiences in our life, both positive and negative, that can, you know, either detrimentally or beneficially influence our identity formation. So it's really important to consider, as professionals working in the field, exactly how that might impact. And of course the point you're making about gender is a really significant, huge transition that a child or young person may be making. And they're often beginning that transition during their adolescence, when their identity is still forming. Mm. So I think that was really the tenor of what was being said at the workshop, was around the massive implications of that and the importance of getting that decision right for that person because of the consequences and implications of it.
And how do we get that decision right? I mean, it's so...
Well, I think one of the things, we had a lot of discussion yesterday. It wasn't really just us talking. It was
dialogue. Yeah,
it was exploring and discussing, and we had a lot of discussion around, well, where does this take us? And what we really landed on was talking about a child's best interest, which is a term that we're all very familiar with in terms of family
separation.
Justice.
Yeah, and we talk about child's best interest in terms of separation, but maybe other areas as well.
Well, also what we were saying is that does the child's best interest not include consideration of identity?
Yeah.
And that, of course, opens up a big space. We would say that it does include identity. And then how do we bring that to the attention of decision makers? And again, through discussion, we were saying that in fact it's awareness raising of identity, what it means, what the significance is, and training, as it has been in lots of other areas to do with family justice, and that have now come to be accepted as part of determinations. It needs a momentum to be built, and before you build a momentum, there needs to be an understanding of it. And I think that we've gone some way, not just us, I mean the conference has gone some way to establishing this as an area of development.
And now, just a couple of words about Lawyer Magic, a one-day course on the secret sauce to law practice scale-up. We demystify all the parts around being a lawyer that you actually need to know to thrive in law, but usually no one teaches you. The three pillars to lawyer magic are the law of attraction, being magnetic, branding, marketing, and positioning yourself as an expert, the honeymoon phase, drawing clients to you, networking, building referral chains, keeping the spark alive, keeping clients happy along the whole journey and getting paid seamlessly, but in a way that clients understand the value of your work. Nicole Evans said, Zoe and Roey were fantastic. They tailored this course around our firm and our needs. We all took away a lot of practical tips and new ideas to implement on a day-to-day basis. We believe the real magic happens by identifying what is naturally unique about you, including your special passions, and showing how to amplify and communicate this. Exhibit A, hopefully like I'm doing in this podcast.
Because
you're from the UK, obviously.
I am.
Where are we at with UK versus Australia in this sort of space?
Well, I think it's collaborative. I mean, I think we're now, you know, the sort of hands across ocean things. You know, Nick is from New Zealand, I'm from the UK, we work together constantly.
Yeah, that's great.
So, you know, it's not really sort of discrete areas of work anymore. Mm-hmm. It's about sort of, you know, working collaboratively, which
sharing
we do.
Research.
Yes, we do. Yeah, yeah, indeed. Yeah.
You mentioned something as well about sports, or you were saying something about coaching and all that sort of stuff, which has been kind of having a bit of, I don't know if I can refer to this at this conference, but like in Netflix, there's been a number of documentaries on that. What was there anything takeaways from that or some thoughts around that?
It wasn't really discussed in full. I guess the point we were trying to make was that a new book that we've actually got coming out next year around these identity and family law issues is looking at, as we pointed out, you know, in the beginning of this conversation, around the traditional areas of family law. And we've, including at least half of the book, is looking at more non-traditional areas, one of which is around child sports people, mm-hmm. and like another chapter's on child soldiers. Yeah. So what we were trying to do at the workshop was to draw on these examples from other experts in the world that are contributing to our book by way of example to help the people that were attending the workshop to understand that more expansive space that we were trying to draw to their attention as being important. Mm-hmm. Like Marilyn and I have done a lot of work over the years on child participation and children's voices, hearing children. And I think there's fairly good recognition now, particularly in our respective jurisdictions, you know, the UK, New Zealand, Australia, that opportunities for children to express their views is really, really important. And so that is really part of the best interests analysis and mm-hmm. the determination that judges are taking into account when they are making decisions in the court. So what we're tentatively exploring, I guess, is whether identity is another component of that milieu that, you know, family justice professionals and family members and children and young people themselves need to be taking account of when they face what may be quite traumatic or, you know, challenging situations in their own family lives.
Mm. And how is it all received by everyone in the audience, you know, that idea of opening up family law to other kind of spaces? Was that well received, or what was the general consensus?
I mean, as I said, we kind of put it out that this is something that we're exploring. We it's the first time we've actually talked about this, isn't it, Marilyn? Mm. So we haven't had the benefit until the workshop here of hearing what other people's responses were to the ideas that we were throwing out, and it was incredibly heartening. Many felt and expressed on the day that indeed they think identity is critical to the way we think about children, but it's not something that we've actually given much explicit consideration to. And Astrid, the psychologist that spoke, made the very important point that identity formation is one of the key aspects of childhood development. Mm. And it's incredibly important. And if you don't have that core, stable, integrated, coherent sense of identity and belonging, you will struggle when you face issues that challenge or traumatise you as you grow older. So it's not to say that your identity doesn't shift and change and evolve in response to those experiences, both positive and negative, that you have, but there's little recognition given to that currently in the family justice system, and that's what we're really trying to put on the agenda.
And now a few words about Artwork, where we bring art to your place of work. As some of you might know, away from the law, I have pursued a passion for art, exhibiting in London, Sydney, Melbourne, throughout China, and at a contemporary show in the Louvre in Paris. I'm now sharing my love of art and creativity with workplaces. I'd love to hear from you if you would be interested in team bonding art lessons, curated pieces for your office, or making your next corporate event a showstopper with a piece of art created live for your guests. I'm also interested in any of the other ideas you might have about how to inject creativity into your place of work and shake things up, hopefully in a good way. The benefit of working with me is that uniquely I am both an artist and a lawyer, so I have an understanding of the law firm corporate events context and can chew the fat with your guests about law, life, art, and my creative process whilst I create your special piece for your firm. Bronwyn O'Lone said, "This was truly an amazing experience. We keep getting comments from those that joined us on our special evening about how inspiring it was to watch you create such beautiful art. The memories will live on in the artwork, which will be hung proudly in our meeting space."
I find it interesting in terms of a paradigm shift. What you're talking about is often in that sort of more when you think family law, people go family law, they think divorce, which is kind of like you're going parents, what are things that parents or mums and dads, husbands, wives go through, and then branching off that kids. But kind of what you're doing is a bit interesting. It's a bit of a paradigm shift where you're starting with like, things with children,
yeah,
and then like, yeah, their parents may or may not stay together, may or may not get divorced, but they might face all these other issues, identity, you know, you mentioned the sports thing, and there's a lot of things I think, you know, you could even talk about, like child brides, child, all that sort
definitely
of stuff.
Definitely, child brides,
all that forced stuff, marriage.
Forced marriage.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are
talking about
all that stuff that comes off that, it's kind of almost like, what are some of the issues that face children, you know, which is some of the work, like, for example, Youth Law Australia do some work around that, which is where I used to work, actually.
Okay.
Like a very, very long time ago when I was at university as a volunteer. I'm not current with it. But I just mean it's an interesting kind of paradigm shift rather than just parents breaking up and then what comes off that.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, what are the things in family law could be kids and what are children kind of going through?
That's exactly right, actually, that we what we've said is that family law, in the way we're thinking about it, is anything that's to do, any law that relates to children and their
and
families. And things like, as I say, detention, we didn't deal with this yesterday. It's a topic that we will be dealing with in the book with an expert who writes on this area. But so a child gets detained because of having done something which contravenes the law. And then they have a period of time as a child or a young person being detained. What does that do? We're not arguing that they shouldn't be detained. What we're saying is, what does it do to identity, to their identity? And how is that being recognised? And what should be done about helping the child maintain their identity or develop their identity or whatever? But something happens. That's a huge transition in a child's life. Something happens. Something happens. We've done a lot of work on child abduction, international child abduction. Huge changes happen to a child during that period of being abducted, even if it's a short abduction, because the basis of their life changes. It changes completely. And the enormous trust issues occur because they didn't know they were going to be abducted, so they don't know who they can trust and who they can't. That has an impact, we're saying, not just on where they're going to live and which parent they're going to live with, and how the person who took them might be punished under the law. It has an impact on how they see themselves and the security that they feel in their lives. So we're at the beginning of our work in this area, but that's the concept and those are the tenets. And when you asked how it was received yesterday, a couple of practitioners came up to us afterwards to say, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to do my work with these children differently because I'm going to bear in mind this issue of identity. That's marvellous. I mean, we don't know what comes out of it, and we're not directing what comes out of it. But that it should be...
It's a bit of a shake-up.
Yes.
Well, it's opened their eyes to an issue that even a lot of the academics describe as being quite hidden, like hidden in plain sight. It's in front of us, but we don't actually recognise it. One of the other issues that was really heavily discussed at the workshop was donor-conceived children.
Yeah.
Because clearly, particularly those where the information is withheld from them until adulthood, that they have been born from assisted reproductive technologies and the pretty devastating consequences that can have for them as they seek to understand the truth, develop trust and reintegrate their new life story with the evidence that they've suddenly had revealed to them is pretty profound too. So there are so many different areas. You know, the care and protection system is another chapter we're going to be having in the book, and children who experience violence and abuse, migrant children, asylum-seeking children. There's just so many different facets that we're just so grateful to have the opportunity that we have got a wonderful network of authors across the world who are contributing to the book in that way. And that we've struck such a point of resonance with practitioners here at the conference who think that this work is really important.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very sort of child-focused, sort of child-centric in terms of, you know, the experiences children can have. It's, a lot of them sound, you know, they can be sort of quite trauma. We're talking about the coaching and, you know, the child, you know, child marriage and all that sort of stuff. And I guess the way that having that trauma at a young age can sort of affect children.
Yeah, and so one of the other really important issues that we're trying to think about and start the conversation about is how the family justice system can be more responsive when you take identity issues into account. So, you know, we began that conversation at the workshop. There's a lot more work to do, but we kind of feel quite optimistic that much of the work that we've done and many others have done, of course, too, around children's participation and voice that is now so well recognised, we can kind of see a similar trajectory with identity issues. And certainly many of the social scientists and the psychologists are thinking in the same direction. So we kind of feel positive that we've found a new area that's worthy of greater exploration and understanding and response from the family justice system that we're all trying to work to improve.
And we've aired it here at Pacifica. This was a launch ground for it.
Fantastic. And it's good that you got that positive feedback from the practitioners that are interested to learn more about it and maybe tweak or think about how they're changing how they practice as well.
Exactly.
All right, well, look, thank you so much. And where can people reach you if they want to continue the conversation or speak to you about anything?
Well, I'm at the University of Otago in Dunedin, New Zealand. Do you want our email addresses?
Whatever you want to put up, a website or whatever you're comfortable.
Yeah, well, sure. My email address is nicola.taylor@otago.ac.nz.
And mine is m.freeman@westminster.ac.uk.
Because there might be other practitioners that are listening to this that might be really interested
in
the work you're doing.
Well, that would be great. We welcome contact from anyone who wanted to get in touch. And, we're very keen to get other people's perspectives. And we learned a lot yesterday, from the participants at the workshop. So it's a two-way street.
Fantastic. Well, look, it's about keeping that dialogue going, which we are here at the Pacific Congress Conference. You can hear the bell ringing because we're being called to go. Thank you very much for listening in. I'll put links to everything below, including links to how you can join Pacifica Congress. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inside Family Law. I hope you got a lot out of it and that it has sparked a lot of questions and conversations that you'll keep having with your colleagues in the area. If you do want to stay connected with me, then please reach out on LinkedIn. You can find me, I'm Zoe Duran, or you can reach me on Instagram @mediationanswers. My website is www.mediationanswers.com.au. If you have any fabulous ideas for a podcast interview, then please be in touch with me. Also, if you would like me to cover your family law conference, for example, or any other conference or event, I'm more than happy to discuss if this would work. So please also do reach out. Thanks very much, and I hope you listen in next time.